This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Think about it. You've been cut as a freshman in college. As a sophomore, you're like 5-12. I know most players, most young players, they'd either quit or they'd look for probably for the best psychiatrist they can, because, man, that are tough odds, but not for Don Paul, major league player. He persevered. He figured it out, and I'm going to ask him what that means, he figured it out, because what happened was he was 13-1 his senior year. Long story short, made it to the big leagues with the Chicago White Sox, World Series champion with the Florida Marlins. Great career in the big leagues, great story. We're going to talk to Donnie right now, but we're also going to get into some of the financial situations that are going on in the world to help some of our people in the game to understand what to do in these times when it comes to your finances. So let's not even waste any time. Let's welcome, and this is Baseball Outside the Box with Pete Caliendo, the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. And we welcome my friend Donnie Paul. What's up, Don?
Hey, good to be here.
Hey, yeah, good to be. You're inside and I'm inside. How's that?
Yeah, well, I'm finally got a good weather weekend. Actually, you might be able to go golf tomorrow.
You know, I heard in Illinois the golf courses are opened up with some restrictions.
Yeah. So people are dying to get out of the house and do something. So that's a good thing, even with all the restrictions.
Absolutely. And then I'm looking outside. I walked my dog this morning for about 45 minutes. Beautiful sunny day here in Chicago. We don't see many of those, so we better take advantage of them. Hey, listen, it's good to have you. Good to see you, obviously. It's been a long time. I want to get started because I think this is a great story. I think you played in the big leagues, you played in college, but you also coach. You had a son playing baseball, so you also coached in the travel system. You know, you got a lot of experience in different levels, so this can be very interesting. But the first thing I want to talk about is what's Donnie Paul do daily? What a routine, because you know you had a routine in the big leagues, and you can go crazy in your house just sitting around watching movies all day. What's Donnie Paul do?
Everybody's going crazy on every day here. So I'm still working. I'm fully employed. Work for Morgan Stanley out in Oak Brook, Illinois, and taking care of my clients. And for a lot of people, they're bored sitting at home. What am I going to do? For me, it's been busier than anything with the way the markets have been and things. So it's been incredibly busy. I've been more busy at home here working than when I'm normally going into the office, really. So not much downtime for me.
Hey, new today, we are on Facebook Live. If you got any questions for Don Paul, former Major League player, Chicago White Sox World Series champion, or on Twitter, just type them in the comment section, and we'll ask the questions. Donnie, and that's something I guess I wanted to start with and make the show, unique from the standpoint, not just talk about baseball development and your career and how you can help coaches and players and parents, but also a little bit about finances. And I say that because I've been through several things. Now, I know these times might be slightly different, but, man, there's been a lot of rough times I've been through. And I remember early on when I started investing a little bit at a time, I can't remember the year because my age is who knows where it's at, but my mind's all over. I can't remember the year, but I lost, I decided to get out. I had all this money invested. Then the market crashed, and I decided to get out, panicked, which I think a lot of people do. They listen to the media and the news a lot of times, and and it's rightfully so. They do panic. But what I've learned personally is that's not the time to panic. That's the time to stay calm. That's the time to look if you got some extra finances, possibly invest, because there's some really good stuff to invest in. And then in the long term, that's going to benefit you. Am I heading the wrong direction there?
No, that's for most people, that's the way to go. But everybody's different, you can't be specific at all, but for most part, that makes sense. Always tell people, be careful about listening to the media. The media, they're out there all the time. They try to, make things bigger and, as big and, as it could be, really. You know, they try to make it even bigger than it really is. And, you know, that's, and they're in the entertainment business, so they want to make it look like it's unbelievable, never happened in your lifetime, this and that. And, you know, so people listen to the media, you can go crazy, because sometimes the media is telling you, you know, do this, and they'll tell you to do that, you know. So, you know, I think one of the best things to do is have a, you know, if you can, have a financial advisor that can help you out in there. But, you know, like you're saying, you got to, yeah, as Warren Buffett says, you know, we buy when there's blood in the streets, that's the time to buy, is what Warren Buffett says.
Boy, and I've listened to him a lot, even though, you know, we've all got financial people. You know, what's great is I've listened to him and, you know, luckily, you know, stayed the way. The other thing I want to ask you, and please add anything else that you think can help people out there. The other thing is, I've always been told, and I guess I got lucky and listened, you know, you're going to have tough times in your life. I don't care whether it's a virus, whether it's you lose your job, whether it's a medical issue, you know, we're all going to have tough times. You're not going to avoid them. There's two things you're not going to avoid, I think, in life: death and tough times. You're in avoiding those two. Always said, if you can, and that's the magic word, if, because I know a lot of people can't, and I understand that. There's some people live paycheck to paycheck, and I'm, you know, I worry about those people. But they've always said, listen, try to save 6 months to a year of money on the side in case something happens. And I think that's a big mistake people make.
To not do that, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's important to have, you know, that base, that 6 months to a year or something, just in case you lose a job, just in case, you know, just in case there's a pandemic, right? You know, yep. You know, 3 months ago, people would just laugh at you if you said that would happen, you know? It's incredible where we're at right now. But yeah, for sure, you should have that in place. And, you know, I tell people, you should have a plan, have an investment plan, a savings plan. And don't deviate from it just because of the emotions of what's going on in the short term. You know, if you have a certain financial need, then yeah, I can see, you know, deviating. But just because you know, people are telling you the market's going to go down or continue to go down or something, just be careful. Look at more the long term. You know, keep that long term picture, you know, going for you. Not be as focused on the short term, the 6 months, what's going to happen in the 6 months or a year. Look at more further down the road if you have that kind of plan.
Absolutely. And boy, is it, I think one of the toughest things, one of the things we make a mistake in, I think, in school systems is, and I know I fell into this, I didn't learn about finances. I didn't learn anything about money when I was younger. Luckily, my grandfather or dad, you know, had mentioned some things to me, and I started saving when I was young. And one of the mistakes we make is we don't save early on when we're young. You know, when you're in high school, you got it. Like I had a job at Johnny's Beef Stand, you know, and I saved a little bit of money every time I made some money, and I kept saving it. That's the right thing to do, because before you know it, that accumulates, right?
It absolutely does. You know, especially starting, the younger you can start, the by far the better, because that money can compound and grow. So if you're starting, if you're fortunate to be young enough to be in your 20s or something, you know, start socking it away as much as you can afford to do. Because I say the longer time frame you've got for that money to grow and compound, the better off you are. And the other thing I want to mention too is it's so important to stay debt free. You know, that's huge. Like you're saying, to save the money, but just being debt free. So many people have so much debt and credit card debt that you're paying 15% interest or something crazy on that. You know, so not spending what you have is huge. You know, I tell people, you know, pay yourself first. You know, when you get your paychecks, pay yourself first and then pay your bills, you know, so, and make sure that you're just not, you know, outspending. And that's a big key, is staying, you know, as debt-free as you can.
You know, that's a great point. The credit cards, man, they can kill you. I mean, they're good in some ways, but they can kill you in the long term. Yeah, because it's easy money, right? You just say, I don't have to pay. I'll just put a credit card. Folks, we got a couple questions, I think, on Facebook, but we're going to get to baseball also. But I thought this was a critical spot in these times, and I wanted to talk about it with an expert, not only in finances, but in the game of baseball. You know, the other thing is, the last thing on the finances is, you know, as people get close to retirement, there's that plan kind of changes a little bit. Just a general idea how that changes.
Yeah, it certainly can. You know, for some people, it could change a lot. Some people, it may not change as much. You know, because I tell people, you know, you're even as you get into retirement, you still hopefully have 30 years to live. that you need this money to last too. So, you know, be careful about thinking that, okay, all of a sudden I'm 65, all of a sudden I'm just going to take everything out and get into cash. You know, for some people it may make sense, but for some people, be careful about that, because you still need your money to grow for you for another 20 to 30 years, hopefully. So yeah. Something to talk to your advisor about as you get close to retirement. You know, certainly can help you out with that and you know, the income that you need.
Hey, you know, we're going to take a question here in a second. And, you know, I guess, you know, we'll take it right now, because I think what's interesting, and this is a good friend of ours, Joe Kish, high school coach here in Illinois, great guy, does a great job. You know, I've got a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, but I know quite a few people who have never played the game at a high level, whether it be any sport, and actually made it either as a coach or a manager. I mean, I can go to the list, at least three or four off the top of my head. One of the guys is from Chicago, if I'm correct, and it's John Bowles. Remember, he was the manager with the Marlins. Yep. And he mentions that and wants to kind of mention John Bowles, mention him a little bit if you know him, you know, a little bit about him.
I love John Bowles. He was my manager for the Marlins, a little bit in the major leagues. He was like in charge of all the minor league personnel when I was in the minor leagues with the Marlins. So yeah, I really like John Bowles a lot. The big thing about him is he was one of the guys that are, you don't see this too often, guys that are blatantly blunt, honest with you. You know, most times, you know, you go into somebody's office and say, hey, you know, where do I stand, you know, as far as making the team, and guys will give you a bunch of, you know, some song and dance. Oh yeah, you got a good shot. You know, you just do this, do that. You'll be here. John Bowles, if you go in there and he thinks that, yeah, you probably don't have a shot, he'll come out and tell you, hey, you don't have a snowball chance in hell. You know, which is great. I mean, you don't want to hear it, but you do want to hear it. You know, so I really, really respect that out of John, that he's such a stand-up guy and honest guy and hard worker, and there's nothing. Can't say enough good things about John.
You know, what do you think got John, I mean, you know, to make it to the big leagues and not have played at a high level, you know, what do you think got him to the big leagues? What were his good attributes as he has? And you mentioned, you know, tough. You also said, you know, that he's brutally honest. Well, I was on with Clint Hurdle the other day, and he said the same thing. Honesty is the policy. I mean, you've got to be straightforward with guys.
You do, and a lot of times you don't see that. So, you know, really, you run across so many times through the systems, you don't hear the right stories from people. But yeah, I don't know, John. I mean, because John, I know, I think he managed, I believe, in the minor leagues too. I know he managed, I think, for the White Sox system for a number of years. And I think until I think maybe when Hawk Harrelson took over as GM that one year, he got rid of everybody who did not play Major League Baseball. I think he wanted those guys as coaches in the minor leagues. So, I mean, some people like John Bowles, who were great coaches and teachers, who were moving up the ranks, you know, were all of a sudden out, unfortunately. But I know he has a good history of being a coach. Same thing, he coached, I think, at St. Xavier's. I've talked to his brother Brian, you know, a lot. And he coached at St. Xavier's, and Brian told me stories about guys who like had full rides in high school to go to St. Xavier's, maybe, to play baseball, and then got hurt. It blew out their arm. And a lot of coaches, college coaches, would take that full ride away because, hey, I want to use it on somebody that it's going to help out my team. John, again, being the stand-up guy he is, said, hey, I promised you this full ride. Yeah, I'm going to give it to you regardless. I know it's going to hurt me, but it's the right thing to do. And that's the thing about John. I think that's why he rolls up the ranks and gets respect from people, because he does the right thing.
Absolutely. You know, it'd be interesting. I think I'm going to try to reach John and get him on the show, because I think it'd be an interesting story to talk to him about how he got to the big leagues as a manager. Not an easy thing through, as you know, you played in a system, you know, to get in as, you know, even as a minor league manager and then make it all the way up to big league manager with all these guys that are trying to make it. Not easy. You know, the other thing is, and I'm going to get a little bit of trouble here, because I'm sure I'm going to get emails and texts and everything, and that's okay, folks. Send them, and I'll respond. here's the thing. Now, Hawk Harrelson and Pachorik, okay? Now, Pachorik, we all know, he's funny, he's different, and that's a lot of fun. They nicknamed you the Pope, okay? And you know I'm going to get emails on this, you know, because Pope Francis or maybe the Vatican will email me, you know, and what, you know, tell us, how did that start? Because then I'm going to get into your career.
So the Pope, I think Pachorek was the one that gave me that nickname. I mean, those guys were giving people nicknames at the time. One Dog, Big Hurt, you know, yeah. A bunch of stuff. They called me the Pope, and that was because at the time, Pope John Paul was the Pope. So they're saying that Don Paul sounds like John Paul, so that's how I became Pope Don Paul, which to me is fine because I'm Catholic and Polish. It's like the Pope was Polish at the time too. But anyway, yeah. I even got some bad fan mail at the ballpark when I was there. People ripping into me for proclaiming myself the Pope, and I'm thinking, you know, it's not like I made this up myself, and I'm going around calling myself this. So it's kind of funny, but it's fine. It's a good nickname.
Well, I'm sure the sensitivity police will be after me soon. they're coming already. They're marching. They're getting ready to send it my way. But no, again, this is all in good fun. You know, we got a lot of respect for the Pope and the Vatican. But you know, the two reasons I talked about bringing on the show. One was obviously the financial end of it, but two was a great story that I think you can really talk about that will allow a lot of young people that listen to the show, but also parents and coaches, to understand, you know, that players at different levels have made it to the big leagues, or, you know, even pro ball or college ball. It doesn't have to be the big leagues. Where did Don Paul, you grew up in Evergreen Park, obviously, but where did Don Paul start playing? And what were some of the things when you were young? This is the important part. When you were young, a young kid, we're about close to the same age. What were you doing on your own that also helped you become a better player?
Nothing like these guys are doing nowadays on their own. There was no travel baseball. There was no, you know, place that you can go for lessons and things. You're on your own. So I mean, back then, I just I love baseball. I just love playing baseball. So started playing organized baseball when I was 7. Started pitching when I was 10, I think. And just absolutely loved it. And played it all summer. You know, playing, live league with friends all summer until it gets dark out outside. Playing fast pitch, they would call it, with a rubber ball off the brick wall over at the Southwest Elementary School over there in Evergreen Park. We just loved doing that all the time. So anyway, and playing through Boys Club Athletic Association in Evergreen Park. I was generally, oftentimes I was one of the better players out there. I wasn't the best player, I don't think. I was one of the better players. But nobody ever looked at me and said, that guy's going to be a major leaguer someday. Or, that guy's going places. Nobody thought that about me. Even in high school, again, I was one of the better players in the team, but certainly not the best. Didn't even make all conference or anything like that, so I was just, nobody scouted me, recruited me in high school. I went to college, University of Illinois, for the education. That was a good school. And then I got to school there, I was like, I'd like to keep playing baseball. I would love to, I'm going to go try out for the baseball team.
Incredible.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, looking back, and I'm thinking, what the heck are you thinking? You got no credentials at all. All these guys are all conference, all area, all state that are on this team and all. I went to the tryouts, and I tried out, and I got cut. all he was expected.
And Donnie, hang on one second, only because we're going to get to that. But I want to go back on something you said. For all our young people out there, I want you to – you heard the term lob league. Well, lob league means – you go out with your buddies. You don't have to have 9-on-9. You could have 4-on-4, 3-on-3, 5-on-5, whatever. You go out to the field. If you got 4-on-4, then you just split the field. You're only hitting to the left side. If not, you're only hitting to the right side, and you put your defense there. And you lob the ball. Somebody pitches, and they just throw it underhand. Then you hit it, and you have fun doing that. You hit the ball all the time. And when you hit the ball all the time, there's action. When there's action, you got to make decisions. And there's it's a whole lot of fun. That's lob league. And then the other part is fast pitch. Donnie mentioned against the wall, right? One-on-one against the wall. These are great things. Donnie, for me, these are great things because that's how you learn the game. I mean, yes, coaching is good. Coaching is important, but depends on the coach you have. But didn't you learn the game a lot quicker that way?
Yes, we did. And you're playing. You're just playing constantly too. So you're doing things. You're playing. The more you're doing it and playing the game and all, the more time you're doing it, the more you're going to learn and pick up things. So, yeah, that's what we were doing, and it was great. A lot of fun and, with friends and things. And, I'd still love to do it today. I'd love to play fast pitch if we could today still.
And I stress the coaches in the U.S. around the world, especially around the world a lot of times, you go to a practice, and you expect to have your 15 players. Well, 15 players don't show because some have work, some have, you know, school, there's studying. So maybe only six players show or seven. You got to figure things out. Well, what a great way to just let kids play, you know, once in a while, like, you know, even travel teams, you have a practice. You know, how about just forget practice, let them play on their own for a little bit. They'll figure out the lineup. They'll figure out who's going to pitch. They'll figure out things. Let them figure it out so they're learning. I mean, isn't that a great – I mean, to me, I think we need to go – I guess what I'm saying is we need to go back to that a little bit because we forgot what how important that is.
Yeah, a little of that certainly wouldn't hurt at all. You know, everything is all organized right now for everybody all the time. And so a little of the old way of doing it I think would be a lot of fun. Yeah, you don't see anything like that anymore anywhere, but I think it would be a good idea.
You know, what did, as you grew up and started playing, now that you look back, making it to the big leagues, and I'm going to get to college because I'm going to get to that college year, but when getting to the big leagues, what do you attribute that to? Because if I read correctly, you know, I almost started laughing as while I'm reading it, because I read, you know, I think you had a split ball. What is a slider? And a what were your pitches?
Well, main pitch, bread and butter, was a split finger fastball.
Yeah, there you go. And then I remember the guy, whoever was writing the article, said his velocity in the maybe upper 80s. You know.
Yeah, it was more like 83 to 85, I think.
That's why I started laughing because I know what most people are thinking. 83 to 85. Tom House lived as a left-hander, lived 10 years in the big leagues at 83, 84. You were right-handed, and you had to live in the big leagues throwing that speed. I guess what I want to get to is what got you to the big leagues?
What got me to the big leagues, really, well, it's tough every year through the minor leagues. You got to persevere every year to, you know, to get through. You got to be one of the best people in A ball to move up to double A, one of the best people in double A to move up to triple A. You know, so, I mean, that was tough. So to me, I always had the attitude of, you know, give it everything you got, you know, working hard, you know, physically, mentally, everything I can, because I only got one shot at this. You know, I never thought I had, you know, the talent like some of these other guys have. Other people are much more talented than I, you know, so I had to stay with it as hard as I could and not, I never wanted to look back and say, gosh, what if I wasn't out partying, or, you know, what if I was in better shape and ready to go and stuff, you know, maybe I could have done it. I never wanted to go back and say, what if, because I'm like, I'm not like any Michael Jordan where I can just quit and just go back to the game again and, you know, and do it. So I think that helped a lot. And then as far as, I mean, my pitching, the big thing was that split finger fastball. I had a fork ball and a split finger fastball. And the big thing was the split finger, I could throw that anytime I wanted to. I would throw it sometimes 3-0 count with the bases loaded to a hitter. You know, so that was a big thing for me because I had a very mediocre, below average fastball, 83, 85 miles an hour fastball. So to be able to have that, good control of that, anytime I want, that count was huge. I had pretty good control, so that was a big thing too. I didn't walk many hitters, got a lot of ground balls, and changing speeds on people. That's kind of what got me there, which was very different than most everybody else that was up there.
Donnie, what'd you do different than – you know, during your career in the minors or college ball, what did you do different than most players? Maybe some mistakes players made that didn't get them somewhere. Did you study more? Did you practice on your own? Anything different you did that can help players out there?
What I did is, again, I really took it upon myself to make sure I did everything I could possibly think of doing. And one big thing is the mental part of the game. I always felt the mental part was just such a huge thing because there's so many talented guys, even in AAA. And there's so many guys in AAA who have just as much talent as the guys in the major leagues. But the difference is just the mental part, where guys are just more tougher mentally in the major leagues, really. So, again, so I would you know, do visualizations. You know, I'd go to bed holding a baseball at night in my bed and visualizing myself pitching an inning, you know, to a team with, you know, say bases loaded, nobody out. I come in a game and see me pitching, three outs, three guys, you know, facing these guys. You know, so I really like the idea and believe that if you've done it in your mind and succeeded in your mind enough, and you've made it real, as realistic as possible, when you get into the real life situation of it, you'll felt like you've already been there and done that. And it's not that big of a deal. So I think that was a huge thing too. So from the mental standpoint, that, and then physically, I know now everybody's doing a whole lot physically, but I was doing more back then when there wasn't as much emphasis on running and lifting and taking care of your rotator cuff and things like that. So I was making sure I was doing all that stuff, to the utmost. So I was in the best physical shape to try to stay injury free too. Another thing too,
yep.
Pete.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Another thing too is I would talk to other guys. I would like to talk to other players to say, hey, you know, what do you know? Try to learn things from everybody else. Learn things from other pitchers. I don't know everything by any means out there. So I'm always looking for new ideas. Other pitchers. How do you throw this pitch? What do you think of the situation? Also talking to other hitters. Hey, when you're up there to bat and facing someone like me, what do you think about it? What are you looking for? What do you watch for? Base runner is the same thing. I talked to some guys. Hey, when you're taking your leadoff and someone's on the mound, what are you looking for when you're going to steal a base, on a pitcher? So you're picking up things from all these other players all the time. And the last thing, too, I know I did was I would record games like Greg Maddux would pitch. Loved watching him pitch. And just watch it and just focus on how he would set up hitters and just, pick up things from that as well, too. So I kind of try to do a lot.
Yeah, matter of fact, speaking about Maddux, I know you spent a week with the Cubs. That might be the shortest time with a team ever in the history of the game, no?
Yeah, it was in 84. I was there for a week, and then we went on strike that year was the reasoning what happened.
I remember that. Listen, you talked about the mental part. What a better person. You could talk to all the doctors in the world and all the people that wrote books, and I'm sure it's really good to read and to listen to a lot of these experts that have gone to school and done the books. But to be in it and deal with it, I think that's the greatest way to learn. And, Don Paul, his freshman year, gets cut. Here you are. You want to give it a shot. You get cut at Illinois. First of all, what was your thought process? And then how did you even think about going out the next year?
Yeah, I was certainly disappointed to get cut. Not that surprised, I guess, but certainly disappointed. So later on in that baseball season, I went out and watched a few of the practices. Just want to see how good these guys really were that made the team and are on the team. And I'm watching them, and, I see they're very good, but I'm thinking, I think I can play with these guys. So I decided then and there, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try out one more time. I'm going to try out my sophomore year. I'm going to get as ready as I can be, do everything I can to be as ready as I can be, because this is going to be the last shot for sure that I'm going to have it doing this. So I tried out, and I made the team. And it was funny because the head coach, Tom Deaton, he came up to me, and he said, he goes, why didn't you try out last year? I was here. He goes, really? He goes, I don't remember you or something. Yeah, so I don't know. They claimed that I grew a few inches and was throwing the ball harder. I don't know. I don't know. But that's what they're saying anyway. I don't know. They think I was throwing, must have been throwing harder then. So I made the team that year. I got redshirted that sophomore year. So I didn't play that year either. So I played my junior year, my senior year, and my fifth year senior year. And after my first 2 years of playing, my record was 5 wins and 12 losses. And some of the other teammates of mine are saying, hey, Don, you got a chance to break a record here. I'm thinking, well, that'd be cool. What kind of record? Career losses. The record's 15, and you already have 12. You're going to be a lock for that. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, that's the last thing I want to be in record book for that. So, but anyway, that offseason, working with the pitching coach, Ted Flora, who was, yep, fabulous for me, we're working on things. And he tells – so I'm asking him a question. I said, hey, Ted, what do you think if I drop down and throw a sidearm a little bit, mix the sidearm pitch in there too? He says, what I think you should do? He goes, I think you should take that forkball of yours and stick it up your I'm like, really? I don't even talk about the forkball. I said, what's up with that? He goes, it's not a bad pitch, but every time you throw it and it gets hit, it seems to go further out of the ballpark than any other pitches. He goes, if you throw that pitch at all this year, you're not going to pitch for me. Thinking, oh, I'm thinking, great, okay, now what am I going to do? Because I like that pitch a lot. So he taught me what he called a slice pitch. It's like almost like a cut fastball slider pitch. So I used that, and I had a bunch of success. So that senior year, I was 13-1, set the record for wins and shutouts that year. So it was partly because I got better anyway with the pitches and things I was doing, but also I give so much credit to the team. You know, because we had a really good team that year. We broke records for wins and things that season. So as you know, so much of a pitcher is what's going on behind you, the rest of your team. You know, if your team's not scoring any runs, okay, your record's not going to look all that good. You know, if they're not playing good defense, you know, there's going to be more hits that there, more run scores. You know, so much people don't realize so much of my success as a pitcher is based on the people behind me as well, too. So that helped out a ton.
You know, and I'm glad that you brought that up because I was going to ask you what happened between, you know, being cut and making it. And now you talked about what you did with Ted Flores. You know, Tom Dean, both awesome guys. Boy, they were fantastic. I remember them well. Learned a lot from just talking to them. But during your freshman year, once you got cut, you came back and made it. And they said, okay, you grew a little bit. You threw a little bit harder. You know, again, I'm not sure how much harder because – if you threw 83, 84 in the big leagues, you know, what were you throwing then, 80? You know, so,
right, yeah.
But during that period that you were about to try out again, what did you do differently yourself? Yes, you grew, but what did you do differently? Anything else?
I don't know if I did too much more differently. Besides, I think I got better prepared maybe. The first time I tried out, I don't think I was as sharp with my pitches and things. I wasn't, you know, as game sharp. It was just kind of hard to get game shot. But the second time, I made sure that I was in the best physical shape, the best pitching shape, you know, that I could possibly be. You know, when I was just playing, all I've ever played, too, is the summer was like what they call semi-pro ball, you know, with some team called the Evergreen Park Pacers. Mm-hmm. So I just playing, it's kind of a beer league kind of a team and stuff. That's all I played with. And it's kind of funny because even when I was in college and even when I was on a college team, I never went to like these Cape Cod leagues or these Alaska leagues or nothing like that. The good players went there, but I never got to go there. I went home and worked and played on my semi-pro team.
You know, and there's a lot of great stories out there because I think sometimes we all think that, you know, the most talented make it. Well, I've spoken to enough guys that are making it to big leagues that that's not always the case. You know, one of the areas I think we, you know, nowadays we're having a lot of tryouts, a lot of showcases, a lot of what I call showcase players. I was certainly a showcase player, even though we didn't have them. What I mean by that is I practiced a lot, and that's important. Practice is important. But, you know, I was a practice player. I didn't really do a lot of game stuff to prepare for games. You know, nowadays tryouts aren't easy. You know, there's a lot of players out there. What's your advice to young players, even young kids that are making, you know, young travel teams or high schools? What's your advice when you go to a tryout? You know, to stand out, to, you know, something to do different, or, you know, what do you do to, because there's so many players out there. Yes, you got to be better than everybody else, but what else can you do? I guess the things we all look for, something different.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because most scouts and things there seems like they're just looking for guys who can light up the ray gun and, you know, how fast are their times. You know, their running times and, you know, their speed off the bat and things like that. So, other than those things that these guys are looking at mainly at, I know, you know, one thing too is sometimes that they do look at just the way you carry yourselves and your attitude and the way you hustle around, you know. So, you know, if it's close between a couple of people, they absolutely would rather have the guy that's, you know, talkative, looks like a leader, you know, moving around all over the place as opposed to somebody who's kind of a little bit lazier looking out there for sure. So, I mean, that's the one thing that you could control for sure of yourself. I think that helps you stand out a little bit more than the other guy who's not doing anything.
Yeah, and I remember when I ran the region for USA Baseball, our national training NTIS program, I remember holding tryouts, and one of the things I looked at right away, and I think it's a must, is when you started coming to the field, you know, who's carrying your bags? You know, is it your mom or dad? You know, are you carrying your bags? You know, how about when you're getting ready? It's like, you know, did you pack your bag? Because if I hear, well, my mom forgot to pack my glove.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's not the stuff I want to hear. And the other thing is, You know, even during the tryouts, I think this is big. I think this is where you really succeeded. And that is, how do you deal with failure? You know, like you miss the ground ball, you throw a pitch and it's a home run in a tryout. You know, how does Don Paul deal with that? So let's take that. Don Paul's at a tryout. Somebody hits a home run off of him. How would Don Paul have reacted to that? And even how would you have taught that now if you reacted incorrectly?
Well, you certainly just have to, you know, kind of take it in stride and just be as determined to go after the next guy. Because I know that's not only a tryout, but I remember in the major leagues, you know, obviously it happened to me a lot, giving up home runs. But to me, what I noticed watching other pitchers give up a home run is it seemed like the next hitter they face, oftentimes it's like ball one automatically, 2-0 counts. They have the time, seem like they walk the next guy. You know, so they're either, it's on their mind still, they're thinking about this home run, they're mad about the home run, they're not focused on this next hitter, you know, or they're afraid of this next hitter now because they're afraid of another home run, they've lost their confidence. You know, so I tell you, I see that so many times in the major leagues and everywhere else too. So I always wanted to make it a point that, hey, if I ever give this home run, which I've given it up my share for sure, that next guy, I'm going after him. You know, I always said, I'm going after him. I'm getting ahead of him. I'm throwing strikes. I'm attacking him. Absolutely. I don't want to, you know, fall behind and walk a guy after that like everybody else has done.
So no, go ahead.
Yeah. It's so much of, you know, what you're thinking after something happens. You know, how do you react to it? Like you're saying, you know, same thing. How do you react when your infielder makes an error behind you? You know, are you going to have a disgusted look on your face? You know, or you look at him, I want to look at my guy, my shortstop made an error, I get the ball back, I look at him, say, yeah, it's all right, I'm going to get you another ground ball right here. Here we go. You know, pick him up, you know, because when I give up a long home or something, I don't want my infielder to look at me, you know, and be disgusted or, oh, my gosh, you know. Hey, everybody's going to be pulling together there together.
You know, those are great points, and I'm thinking, boy, imagine giving up a home run in the big leagues with 40,000 fans there, what that must feel like. You know, I can't express that, but if you look at it, when you look at a young kid that's 11 years old, that's out playing with, you know, organized baseball, you know, those 40 people at the game is like 40,000 because you just gave up that home run. And I got to believe you've got to start training kids at a young level, how to deal with that. You just don't learn that in the big leagues or in AAA or AA.
Yeah.
You know, learning how to deal with that is not easy. What's some advice? Did you do anything? I know you mentioned some great stuff right now, but did you do anything different when you gave up a home run or you made a throwing error as a pitcher to remind yourself to get you back focused?
No, I don't think there's anything to remind me of it. I just knew it. I mean, that was just my kind of my mantra all the time was, hey, just not let the last play affect what's going to happen going forward. Again, there's nothing you can do about what just happened besides you can learn from your mistake or learn from whatever happened, but don't let that affect or have something bad happen to the next person at all. It's a whole new thing. Same thing with every outing I had. You know, I always said, okay, you have a good outing or bad outing, you can think about it for that night, but after that, you know, put it away. There's nothing you can do about it. Learn from it. And just go on and be as best as you can be the next time you get out there.
Awesome. Love it. And a couple people on. Tony Garofalo, our good friend, with former trainer of the big league club, Chicago Cubs, on Facebook. I got to get Tony on. Also, Herb Forkenbrock, the president of the Pitch and Hit Club, a great organization I'm part of, which, you know, honors people in the game of baseball in Chicago for many years, started up by scouts in Chicago. Great, great organization. But listen, the other part would be this, Donnie. Talk to our pitchers, young pitchers who are not throwing hard right now, you know, because everybody's talking about throwing hard, but they've got to have to pitch in games. You know, eventually you develop your arm and there's ways to develop your arm and many people are training to do that. But talk about as a right-handed pitcher not throwing hard, what that type of pitcher needs to do to be successful. Some of the things that they need to work on.
Yeah, so, I mean, velocity obviously is an important thing to have, but I think almost as important or more important is the other two big items is having control, so to be able to spot your fastball wherever you want, you know, low, you know, inside, outside, low, high, wherever you can. That is huge to be able to spot it, and to get that movement, to have a fastball with movement, especially later movement, is huge. you know, a straight fastball that's really hard, but if it's straight coming in, as straight as a string, people end up timing that and ripping it. You know, so if you have movement on your fastball, you can move the ball around, and then also just be changing speeds. It's just another huge thing for being a pitcher. You know, so if you can change the speeds, move it around, you don't necessarily have to have that velocity, but you have to. You need to have that control and that movement and changing speeds is so important.
You know, let's look at that a little bit. Let's break it down. Spot pitches. Now, obviously, you can practice spotting pitches in and out. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Your body will figure it out. You don't necessarily need coaches all the time there with you. It helps if you have a coach. But what other advice? What did Donnie Paul do? You do anything different to spot a ball on the outside corner on a right-handed hitter when you're practicing? Was there something you told yourself, a visual thing, anything?
Well, I'll tell you, even growing up, I would, you know, throw the ball off the wall. Me playing by myself with a rubber ball, throwing off the wall, just repetitively, you know, hitting spots, trying to hit, you know, this side of the box and the wall, that side of the box and the wall. So, I mean, people can still do that, you know, where you're just trying to hit that on your own doing that. But also just, you know, when I'm focusing on the catcher, you got to take everything else out of the whole picture. You know, when I say when you're facing a hitter, I'm just trying to look at right, you know, the catcher's glove. You know, you don't even see the hitter at all. Don't see the umpire. Don't see the hitter. You just look at that catcher. Then you're zoning in the catcher's glove, and then I'm zoning in on just the pocket of his glove. You know, so the small spot that you can really zone in on, that's what I felt like I had to do that would help out on just taking everything else out of the equation at all there. Because I remember there's a story about Steve Stone. I think he said one time about when he became a Cy Young Award winner, and, you know, after a couple of years where he was so pitcher in the major leagues. And they asked him what the difference for him is. And he said the difference was he took the batter and the umpire and everybody else out of the whole equation. The fans didn't hear nothing. Now he's just focusing more on exactly, you know, hitting that glove. Because, I mean, you really are basically somebody told me once, you're a professional glove hitter is what you are. You're not a pitcher. You're a professional glove hitter. That's what you do. And it's kind of true in a way.
Absolutely. You know, the other part you mentioned was movement. Not easy. Maybe, you know, talk a little bit about how can a young player get some movement?
Before I get to that, too, one last thing about hitting your spots. Work on a player. Some people work on playing catch. Mm. You know, a lot of times people are just playing catch, and you're just playing catch, loosening your arm up, and it's kind of mindless. But when I play catch, it's like, okay, hey, I'm trying to hit my partner's, you know, left shoulder, try to hit his right shoulder, try to hit his hip. You know, so you're working on that control even while you're just playing catch and warming up.
You know, so, that reminds me of a friend of ours, both of ours, Bill Soup Campbell. Boy, I haven't talked to Bill in a little while. And I remember playing catch, you know, obviously another top reliever, Cardinals. He played with a lot of teams also. I remember playing catch with him, and every time he threw the ball, it hit me in the knees. You know, it's almost like he was programmed to constantly throw down there, you know, but he could spot it anywhere he wants. And, you know, same thing with Tom House. He'd do a demonstration and he could throw a ball in and out, hit a gnat's ass anytime he wants. You know, I mean, it was so that's important. Now, movement is not easy because you want to get the ball to move. It sounds good, but how do I do that?
Movement, it certainly is tougher. So you can experiment on different ways to grip the baseball. There's no one right way or one wrong way, I don't think, to do it. People have a bunch of different grips out there. They have different grips on their curveball, different grips on their fastball. You know, part of it's the grip. Part of it for me, really, I was able to, when I threw, I was just kind of turned my wrist over at the end, just a little bit. Not like I was throwing a screwball or nothing, but just when I was getting re-released, I would just kind of flick it just a little bit. And I think that helped me get the little movement, that the kind of sinker movement on a fastball as well, too.
Great advice. Love it. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, because, you know, in the old days we used to have certain grips, but nowadays, you know, people just experiment with grips. Sometimes all of a sudden you hold the ball differently. It doesn't have to be a way somebody taught you. And all of a sudden you see the ball move. I mean, I think that's fantastic. Hey, I want to give it a shout out to, I believe, first-time listener, Manch Carlos. He says, all the best from Ecuador. The Miraflores Baseball League. Welcome on Facebook Live with Pete Caliendo and Donnie Paul, former Major Leaguer, World Series champion, pitcher, Chicago guy. You know, the last one what you mentioned was the change of speeds. That is not easy because most young kids know one speed, and that's throw it as hard as you can.
Right.
Some advice on working on trying to get either young kids or even how you worked on it to try to, you know, get yourself to learn how to speed, have the difference of speed in the ball. And I know we need every pitch is a little different, right? Because you got a curveball, different speed, changeup, fastball are all different speeds.
Right. Yeah. I think the young kids, I try to have them throw a fastball and throw in a changeup. You know, I don't want to throw a curveball too early. You know, you don't want to wait till you're at least 13, 14, something like that, ideally, to be able to throw curveballs. But a changeup is, you know, not a glamorous pitch by any means. A lot of people don't even want to deal with it because it's just not sexy enough for them. They just want to throw the big heater. But a changeup to me is can be with such an effective pitch. You know, because as long as you keep the same throwing motion of your arm speed looks the same as your fastball and just comes out slower, it can be a devastating pitch to these guys that are these big hitters who are just sitting on a fastball and they're thinking it's a fastball and all of a sudden it's a slower on there. It's just a huge thing that's not going to hurt your arm. It can give you success because you're changing speeds.
You know, Donnie, you've been, you know, and again, I guess that's another grip issue. You know, you can have different grips for change-ups. Right. I know in the old days, they, you know, and they still, some guys still use it, you know, they have the circle change. The problem with that with young kids, their hands aren't big enough. I guess some kids are throwing natural change-ups because their fingers are too small. But there's ways to change the grip on that, even for young kids, to be able to slow the ball down a little bit more.
Right. Yeah, definitely there's a lot of different ways to do it and things. And, you know, just like anything else, it seems like now you can just Google anything and find out so many different ways to do it. You know, I Googled change up just to see all these different ways that people were doing it. So, I mean, that's a good way to go. But, yeah, you want to look at these different ways and see which ones, you know, kind of fits your hand and the way that you can throw a ball. And like we said, there's no one way to do it. Experiment and try a bunch of different ways until you find something that kind of works for you.
Donnie, throughout the years now, okay, so we take you through a youth player to the, you know, to college ball, well, high school, also college ball, and then pro ball, big leagues. Coaching travel teams now, I remember with your son also. What's changed in the game? And, you know, again, I want coaches to learn from this. What's changed in the game for the positive, but also what's changed that maybe we need to look at and say, hang on a second, slow down. We need to do things a little different if you want to develop better players.
Wow.
Yeah. And that could be in pitching or the game in general. You know, and I'll give you one example. I'll give you an example. And this is proven fact. We've seen it. Science has shown it. Two things. We're lacking multi-sport athletes. 99% of big league players were multi-sport athletes. And on top of it, I interviewed a top golfer. And the top PGA players, there's only one guy or gal, I think, no, one guy, because I didn't talk to the gals, one guy that was not a multi-sport athlete that made it to the PGA. All of them were multi-sport athletes. That's one. And two, we're playing a lot now instead of practicing. We're playing way too many games, and we've seen the repercussions of that, and we know the science behind that. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I completely agree with that too. Yeah, there's, you know, not enough practice time, it seems like, out there. But, yeah, the multi-sport thing is – it's, you know, it still seems like it's still bad that you know zoning in on one sport and that's it. I love to see the kids playing 2-3 sports through high school if they can, instead of just focusing on one thing. You know, so many people are, you know, having Tommy John surgery when they're in high school. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody's hurting themselves, their arms, their knees, and things like that. It seems like much more than, you know, years ago when you were doing, you know, playing, you know, the multi-sport kind of thing. So I think it's really important to try to, you know, and then you got the burnout factor too if you're just playing the one sport. It's so much better for the kids' health and well-being to be doing several sports that they can be really good at.
Awesome.
You know, and the other thing, you know, that's different is all the analytics going on now. Oh, my goodness. You know, all the video and they're looking at the rotation of your ball, and it's just unbelievable all this stuff. You know, you're almost sick of hearing about it all. It's I don't know if that's good or bad or what, but I'm just kind of thinking the old school coaches and things all think it's a bunch of BS, and all the newer, younger people think it's the best thing out there. I guess I'm sure there's good and bad to it for sure out there too, but that's certainly has changed.
Yeah, it has changed, and absolutely, there's a little bit of, I think if you have a little bit of a balance with it, I think that's what will help. Yeah. And, you know, in a great area, you talk, and we're almost coming to the end, Donnie. We really appreciate your time. When you look at even when Moneyball came out, they started releasing a lot of scouts in professional baseball. People are thinking, well, I'm just going to do it with video cameras and computers. But then you look at the good teams, I use the Nationals, Mike Rizzo, the GM of the Nationals, a Chicago guy, he uses both. He's got great scouts for the human factor of it also, but he's got technology behind it. And I think if you balance those two in training, it could be helpful, but sometimes you can go way overboard on one end and forget the other. Donnie Paul made it to the big leagues the old-fashioned way. That's practicing hard, being smart, and persevering. Is there anything in baseball right now? Well, we could end it with this, and usually I like to end it any comment you might have for coaches, players, and parents in the, to help them out. Any suggestions you have from, you can end it with your own final comments, but is there anything, you would change in youth baseball or travel baseball? Because you were there, you were coaching in the system. Anything you would change there to that maybe might help the game a little bit?
I don't know. Nothing I could think of, really. Besides this, again, like we talked about, just having people, not stressing these kids have to play, baseball year round, and that's it. Because there's some coaches there that say, hey, I want you playing this year round. If you're gonna be doing something else, I'm gonna take somebody else on my team here. So I don't want to see that. We know how sometimes the parents can be just way over. Overburdensome with their thoughts and their opinions on who should be playing, who should not be playing. Just overbearing on their kids on, hey, you got to practice more, you got to do this, you got to do that. You just want to just have it fun. The first big thing is make it fun. If it's not fun, it's not worth doing at all. So you got to really enjoy it, have a passion for it. So when you're coaching, you want to make it a fun time to come out and practice. So kids are looking forward to that instead of this is almost like a job.
And how about lastly, any advice, maybe even for parents? Here's the big one, the famous car ride home, after a kid has a bad day. Have you had any of those with your son or daughter?
I don't know. Yeah, sometimes we'll talk about it. I mean, None of the car rides where you're ripping into, your child for something or other, but sometimes maybe talking like, hey, okay, so what were you thinking in this situation? Or even to talk about other people. Hey, how about little Johnny over there? Look what he did, and when he did this play there, what did you think of that? And what was going through your mind, and something like that. So talking things through and educating instead of, just kind of ripping into them and, don't do that again kind of thing.
Excellent. That's a great way to end it. And for parents out there, a little bit of advice on that ride home. If your son or daughter has a bad day, hate to say it because, I'm a man and, send them home with mom because she's going to be a little bit more sympathetic. Don't send them home with dad. But that's my final advice. And listen, Donnie, this has been great. I really appreciate the time and catching up. Love it, man. Great job.
Yeah. Thanks for having me out. It's always enjoyable.
All right, that is Donnie Paul, a World Series champion with the Marlins, but came up with the Chicago White Sox, played most of his career with the White Sox. Fantastic. Really loved enjoying him. So thanks to Donnie Paul. Thank you to Brian Kroc, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. Check them out, lineupmediagroup.com. They got a lot of great shows. Don't forget, check us out. The show is live on Facebook and Twitter right now, but we'll replace the show back on both again later on. If you missed the show, check it out on YouTube, Peter Caliendo. Instagram, it'll be on. Also, Peter Caliendo. And don't forget, Facebook, obviously. And then the audio will be placed on our podcast. That is baseballoutsidethebox.com. Thanks to both, again, our producer and also Donnie, along with our special people. That is our guest in the U.S. and around the world. Thanks for joining us again on the show. Please spread the show and all your social media. It really helps get it out and educate people in the game of baseball. Remember, this is the show that loves to challenge the status quo, and we have a lot of great guests. So don't forget, listen to us. Tomorrow is going to be interesting, 5 p.m. Central Time, Illinois. We're going to Taiwan. one of the top baseball people, broadcasters in Taiwan. We're going to talk about Taiwanese baseball, some of the best baseball in the world. That comes from Taiwan baseball, and you're going to learn a lot about baseball development. So see you tomorrow on tomorrow's show. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a good and safe day. God bless you. Adios.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.